This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 4th of November, 1953. The title of this lecture is Process to Resolve Randomity and Automaticity. This tape is 27 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape ends abruptly, as did the original master recording.
November the 4th, afternoon lecture. All right. This afternoon, we are going to take up that subject which has long been neglected, called straight wire. And I'm going to show you that there exist ways and means that are dreamed of in his books, Horatio, on the subject of straight wire. The advent of straight wire came about some thousands of years ago when somebody said to somebody else, "How are you?" And the other fellow didn't answer automatically. He really thought about it for a moment, and he said, "Say, you know, I feel terrible." He discovered at that moment how bad off he was, and we had the therapy known as straight wire in its embryonic form, of course. In 1894, a fellow by the name of Sigmund Freud announced his libido theory. Went off the rails, went into the ditch. It's an interesting thing that Sigmund Freud had a psychotherapy and deserted it. He's working with a fellow by the name of Breyer, impossibly spellable name, impossibly unspellable name, impossibly spellable. I thought I'd key in a talking circuit like I was talking about this morning, but what it came out with, and that was the first thing it said to say. So. Well, a fellow by the name of Breyer had been fooling around for some time with hypnosis. Hypnosis is a work of world period of about 1835, mainly a fellow named Charcot. But nobody had psychotherapy in mind. All he wanted to do was just figure out a lot of things. Utterly fantastic, and has not made sense until this last year, what Charcot did in the name of hypnosis. From 1835, I have to look this up sometime, find out Charcot really was 1835. It says so in the medical books, I don't believe them. Charcot had some fantastic things which he used to do routinely with hypnosis. He would hypnotize the subject and then have the subject feel the temperatures of things some distance away, or discover the contents of various liquids in various bottles which were otherwise hidden from view. He would have people read nameplates on the other sides of things, which they obviously couldn't see, and went through this enormous amount of hocus-pocus, as it was thought that day, that neither he nor anybody else had any inkling about. Fabulous. What was he doing? Well, in any hypnotic trance, you can tell the person to be someplace else, and if it had actually occurred to anybody, to tell anybody, to be 3 feet back of his head. In any good hypnotic trance, it would have occurred. And if any hypnotist did anything else but talk, he would have found out from the preclear that there was such a thing as exteriorization. But this communication never went on. How? How did Charcot do these things, and what is this all about? Will you today, working with the preclear, wide awake, knowing exteriorization and the other phenomena you will encounter in the mind, will be able to do exactly the same things and much better that Charcot was experimenting with 115, 120 years ago. It's interesting, isn't it? Because that technology was so thoroughly lost that in modern books of hypnotism you don't even vaguely discover anything resembling the work of Charcot. In books printed in 1890, you discover nothing of this character. Books of 1890, 1880 on the subject of hypnosis had lost it already. Books just about a little bit earlier than that still had it. And any hypnotist could have done it, and done it with accuracy. We have two bottles, both of them black bottles. They're tightly corked. One of them contains alcohol, the other one contains water. We hypnotize the person and ask him which bottle contains water and which contains alcohol, and he names them correctly. We start to deal cards, and we ask him what the next card coming up is. And then we go off on some wild monkey business about reading the future and prediction, as Ryan is doing. Only subjects which have eyelid flutters work on this prediction stunt, which depends essentially upon the person being well enough exteriorized to see the bottom of the card before it is turned over and is visible to the operator. You get what impossible combinations have been worked out by lack of observation and lack of communication on this subject. Nobody knew about exteriorization. And so they go around and put people to sleep and put them under drugs and do all sorts of things with them and call it psychotherapy and fumble, and then all of a sudden peculiar things would happen, and they had no clue to engrams, they had no clue to facsimiles, and they just promptly go get lost. And the techniques themselves would turn up and become lost again. Same way with straight wires. Simple questioning, as done by medicine men for thousands and thousands of years, making the patient recognize something of his own difficulties, has been the only actually workable psychotherapy on the whole time track. The rest of it ended in something else than psychotherapy. And so it was with Breuer and Freud. They were using hypnotism, and they had already lost the work of charcoal, or didn't know it well, and they were putting people in a trance and then asking them to remember things. Just exactly why they had to go into a trance to remember something is a little bit difficult to figure out, because they were trying to make the person, well, the goal of the work of Breuer and Freud was... It isn't really fair of me to put a goal in there, is it? Well, I tell you, the truth of the matter is they never said. And I wouldn't go so far as to say they didn't know. But it was a lot of fun, anyway. But what they called, later on, free association, if you will excuse the phrase, verbal diarrhea on part of the patient, was nothing more nor less than a concept built upon the much earlier idea of physic, from which we get the word physician. And these people were dramatizing, as Freud adequately demonstrates in his work, a prenatal constipation engram. And they thought by relieving this constipation, I'm sorry that it goes this way, it's just as grimy as their work really is. This verbal diarrhea was supposed to cleanse. Even their terminology, when taken from the original language in which they were doing it, and so on, is the exact duplicate of just that. They had reversed around the idea, and they thought that the mind needed a purge of some sort. Well, this was the idea they came to, and do you know they never had any success from the moment they came to that idea on forward to 1954, when it's still going strong. This is what's known as free association, and other phrases and so forth came up with it. But their original work was nothing more nor less than straight wire, while the patient was hypnotized. We don't know why they had to hypnotize the patient. That's something else they added. But the original work was just straight wire, and they slid from straight wire into this idea of mental catharsis. Instead of getting them physically, why, they gave them physic mentally after that. They were getting desperate, and the tremendous quantities of material which they uncovered were written down carefully on paper. And we had this fabulous dramatization take place when these people are right on the verge of actually accomplishing something. Today, physicists who are working in the field of modern nuclear physics treat the messed universe more or less in the same fashion. They give it a shot of voltage in order to make the messed universe regurgitate some data. In fact, you kind of got this dramatization all the way up and down the track. Well, it's the wrong way to go about something. Now, we were doing that in 1950, but that was kind of in agreement with everybody else that had been doing any work. Well, it wasn't until we pulled cleanly out of that we started to make some progress. And we started to take a look at the factors involved and got away with the idea of physics, we started to make a lot of progress. Freud was making progress as long as he was working with Breuer and hypnotism, and stopped making progress the second he got into the same idea of physics. Preclear has got an awful lot of things in him, and we're going to administer this mental catharsis and get him out. Now, we were doing that with engrams. We could just run enough engrams out of the guy, why, he'd be in good shape. True enough, worked many, many times over. But let me show you something about this. With a few straight wire questions, one student here, I mentioned this earlier in the course, came in the office one day, 42 Aberdeen Road. Had a headache, I think it was. I asked him a few questions in straight wire, headache disappeared. Then I showed him there was an engram under it simply by lowering him back into the engram, and the engram reappeared. Remember that? Very interesting. I think he had the headache for days afterwards. But I've gotten rid of it by straight wire. What is straight wire? It just means stringing something from a present time consciousness to a memory, like stringing telephone lines. So we get communication open between the past and the present. And that, in essence, is its definition. That's why it's called straight wire rather than recall or something of the sort. There could be so many kinds of recall. So we have this highly specialized kind of recall, and it's this simple level of processing. The preclear is in present time and in contact with present time, and we simply ask him questions which restore to him certain memories. Now, that was the original definition of straight wire. But that is not the best definition for straight wire. You can define something, really, only when you know what it is doing. And if you know what it is doing, then your definition, when known, should make it possible to relieve or work with what is defined. That's an action definition. All right? We haven't had an action definition of straight wire until this past year. Straight wire is that process which restores the self-determinism of the preclear in placing incidents and relationships precisely in space and time. That's straight wire. But that's also the definition of everything we're doing.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
Tells you that probably the best process under the sun would be just that process, straight wire. I don't tell you right this minute that it is. But it sure lines up with exactly what we're doing. Because in present time, he locates himself in other times and places, past and same time, present and future time. He just locates incidents in himself, negatively and positively. And what do you know? You key out, banish, and blow up practically every single engram in the bank, if you know how to do it. The first straight wire that we had required a cleverness which was diabolical. Fortunately, our present straight wire, as we are using it in Scientology, we've never used this word before in Scientology, I call your attention, we used it in Dianetics. In present time, we're using it in Scientology, it is not being employed with diabolical cleverness. You have to be pretty slippy sometimes, but all you're doing all you're doing in essence is taking over other determined spaces and making self-determined spaces out of them. It's all. By what? By making the pre-clear look. All you have to do is make him look. He'll find out two things immediately. He isn't there, and it's not important. These two things he finds out immediately. The only reason the pre-clear is not in his body, I've been hitting this now all this time we've been here. The only reason you can't exteriorize him easily is he's not there. He's on inverted dynamics. What inverted dynamics are there? Where eight dynamics? Any one of them become inverted. Well, how do you re-invert dynamics easily, fast? Straight wire is the answer. All right. You lead him to look. And the less duress you have to place on him to lead him to look, better off you are. Remember this, that there's an optimum duress under which you put a pre-clear. And that's always, always, I repeat, always plus duress for the pre-clear. It's always more duress than he is accustomed to. Whether from terms of speed or pressure or otherwise. You have to add your potential to his potential to push him anyplace. I don't mean by that you get inside his head and look for him. But he's got to know that he's being shaped up there and stood up and made to act. So let's lose the idea right there that straight wire is a permissive technique. We are not interested in permissive techniques any more than we are tremendously interested in brutal techniques. There can be too much duress, always. The only place the auditor fails is in too little. Too little duress. He said, well, do you remember that? The fellow says, well, all right, we'll go to something else. What's the matter? Well, you see there rather quickly that the best place to have the auditor is in present time. That's the best place to have the auditor. What's the best place to have a pre-clear? Ditto. If you could get all of your pre-clear into present time, you'd say be 3 feet, be 50 feet, be 1,000 feet back of your head and on the other side of the moon, and he'd come back and hand you a couple of beams of stardust as a present. You really had this lick, see? Nothing to it. Now, pre-clears who have been processed by older techniques in Scientology come up against this little pat cake light feather touch hit on the head technique and stumble and fall on their faces. What is it? It's just straight wire. Well, it's very funny that somebody who's been processed and processed and processed, and you suddenly come up to them and they feel a lot better for having been processed and all that sort of thing. And all of a sudden you do this technique. Now we're going to call this technique orienting straight wire. Differentiate it from Dianetic straight wire. You do this technique called orienting straight wire, and you just be flabbergasted. The first thing he's liable to say to you is, like I was telling you the other day about certainty. These lectures are very consecutive here. More luck than planned, but they are. And he tells you, oh, he's here and he's there. And, well, you've just been having a good time and you've just been chasing him all over the universe. And you just got everything all keyed out. You know you did and so forth. And he's in good shape and he looks better and he looks not even vaguely human. He looks like something alive. And you say, gee, we're getting someplace. You say, we've asked him if he was certain of this and certain of that and certain of something or other. Now, that was that little stumbler there the other day, and I saw you stumble on that one. How certain is certain? There were two or three cases in the class that just made kind of miserable about the whole lecture. How certain was certain? Well, how certain can you be that the pre-clear is certain? Well, and how certain am I? You know, that kind of a thing. You'll say, now, are you certain of that? Now, honest, you'd swear this pre-clear is functioning. You've been going along all right, not crazy, nothing. See, we aren't just on to something else. We're on to the center pin when we're dealing with this. this pre-logic about the function of theta. It's locating things in space and time and creating space and time in which to locate things. And if you don't bail him out of spaces and times in which he thinks he is, he's not going to be able to create a thing. He's just as young as he ever was. So that not even age is a bar to this process. Well, all right, well, we've got this pre-clear sitting there, and he says, can anybody be certain of anything? You look at this pre-clear's been doing change of space and doing hurdles across the moon, and it's been 3 feet by his head and everything, and all this has been going on, and you all of a sudden ask him that question, and he suddenly bobs like that. Well, can anybody be certain of anything? He'll be silly. Wide open case, see? Wide open case. You run into them and you say, so and so and so and so. And they say, well, it's as much reality as I have on anything. How much reality is that? Well, one small candle light burning in a vast, dark desert, badly needing snuffing. That's how much reality they've got. Tiny, tiny. What do you ask them? Here we get in on the technique itself. What do you say to such a thing? Can anybody be certain of anything? You think you're going to hear this seldom. You think this is something that's very peculiar, that we're going to dig up this case out of the rag bag and hold up just one case on this and say that's how tough they can get. No, that's routine. You say, well then, what do you say? Are you certain that nothing can be certain? Yes. Then you're certain of something. And that's what I mean by too much duress, because that's the way this technique is run. You don't hammer him with the fact that he is certain, but you handle him into a certainty. He right away becomes more certain. Now you say, now are you certain that you're not here? Yeah, kind of certain I am not here either. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm not here, but I'm not very sure. Well, where aren't you in the past? Well? No, I guess I'm pretty much everywhere in the past. Uh-oh. Somebody's buttered all over the universe. Not very serious, because you can bail them out of it awfully fast. Theta can be everywhere. Nothing to that. All right. You say, well, all right, now, where aren't you in the future? Well, I don't know. I guess I'm pretty much everywhere in the future. Isn't there one place you're not? No? Huh? Well, where aren't you in present time? Remember what I said about getting buttered across half the universe on an inverted dynamic? Inverted 7, inverted 8? That's what you've walked into. Religion. It was Bishop Shenanigan that was at the bottom of this one. Lord knows how many spirals ago, and he was a devil. Oh, geez, now, Tony. You say, where aren't you in present time? Are you over in the corner of the room? Yes, I am. Oh, I'm there just as soon as you mention it. Uh-oh. Well, now, there's a way to take this one up, and I'll give it to you in a moment. It's a very specific way to take it up. But this is not the time to take it up. And this, my children, is what I'm trying to convey to you. Sometimes the simplest techniques are the ones you ought to be handling. And the wisest and shiftiest techniques are very effective, but sometimes you're just overshooting the course. You're something like on the order of Gallipurchy singing to the coyotes. This is a wonderful technique, you see. It's just gorgeous. It has color, flash, dash, daring, and you as an auditor are just tremendous. And you turn it loose on this pre-clear and a sparkling cascade of pure starlight. Throw a few sunbeams in, wave your hand magically through the air so that the pre-clear is now clear. And he says to you, well, I can touch all the walls in this room. I've always been able to do that. Your great adroitness. You say, all right, now how about some mock-ups? And you dash your pretty clear through this vast and romantic and colorful parade of mock-up so beautifully, with such deft voice, with such tone, such beautiful tone. And when you finished all this, he did all of them. You say, all right, now be 3 feet back of your head. And he says, what head? He did all these mock-ups, but he seems to be getting worse. In other words, what you're doing is trotting out, you're just plain trotting out artillery and everything else, and you're shooting at something that isn't there yet. That's just your anxiety as an auditor. You put on a beautiful show in an auditorium which is completely empty. Well, the trick is, if you want to put on a good show, and you ought to as an auditor, make sure you've got an audience, namely a preacher. The way to get an audience is to start in on straight wire. Now, I've just given you a case. Given you this case. And today we're talking about and we're opening up the gun on clinical procedure step one. Clinical procedure is different than standard operating procedure. Standard operating procedure is something we hand out to the folks. Clinical procedure is, we'll take this up far more lengthily, but just in passing, is that technique which is to be used in a clinic to maximum result with minimum time on the worst possible preclears. And on the assumption that anybody who comes near you is what room? You just assume that. They walk up the steps, you say they don't know anything about the room. In other words, we're going to enter it on sub-step 7. We're going to enter it at step 8. And step 8 is going to be every case we look at. Guilty until found cleared.